Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. Today we're going to talk about kidney cancer advocacy and building a groundswell of support for research. And we're going to talk with Dina Battle, who's recently created a new organization called KC Cure, Kidney Cancer Cure. And she has a really fascinating story that I know Robin knows better than I do. So I think I'm going to pass the lead here to Robin and introduce you to Dina Battle. Hi, Dina. How are you? Dina, are you online? We're having a technical difficulty, I think. Dina, are you online?
Yes, she's coming right back. I hope that you will be able to readmit her
okay.
to the discussion.
Well, Robin, why don't you give us a little introduction here while she's getting coming back.
Okay, well, Dina was happily married to Chris Battle, and they have two lovely daughters. Chris was diagnosed with kidney cancer and made a valiant fight against it and really pursued everything that could be pursued, but eventually the disease got the better of him. And Dina had sort of the same reaction to her husband's death that I've had, only she's taken it in a different direction. We both believe in helping other people who are facing the same problem. But Dina ended up starting this wonderful new organization called KC Cure. And KC Cure is raising funds specifically for research to help conquer kidney cancer as soon as possible. And research is just coming along so quickly with all kinds of cancer. We are very hopeful that this approach with throwing some more money and some more researchers into the battle will help with finding a cure for renal cell carcinoma in the near future.
I understand that Chris and Dina both were quite active in Smart Patients as part of his journey. Is that right?
Yes, and everyone on Smart Patients follows their situation with great interest because it was they were very good communicators, and it was a heart-rending situation. Of course, everyone who has young children who's facing this disease is in a heart-rending situation, and that's why people are so passionate about pursuing research and cures and getting information to the people who need it.
Joyce and Robin, can you hear me now?
Yes, hi.
Hi, Dina, yes.
I could hear you guys, but you couldn't hear me, so I apologize for that. I don't know what the problem was.
Well, I'm glad we're back in business here. Good. Welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you for giving me this opportunity. I'm grateful. And Robin and I have known each other for a very long time through the Smart Patients community. And Joyce, you and I had the great opportunity to meet recently at ASCO GU. So it's nice to be with two very passionate patient advocates.
Great. And we're glad to have you in the business as well.
Yeah, it's great to have you here, Dina. I just gave a little bit of your history with Chris and with why you have dedicated yourself to this cause of finding a cure for kidney cancer. Kidney Cancer Cure, a new organization, really started out with a big bang. Could you tell us about when you started and your successes so far?
Absolutely. So we launched at the beginning of June, so it hasn't even been a year. And our goal was to raise money for research grants. We had a goal of raising at least $250,000 in the first year so that we could put out at least one peer-reviewed research grant. And we launched with a fun little thing called No Tie July, so people could not wear ties for the month of July and donate to kidney cancer research. And just in that first month, we raised $50,000. And we are on target to hit our goal of $250,000. And in December, we put out our first RFP requesting proposals for a $100,000 grant. And that will be awarded in April. So we are off to a great start. It's really been a remarkable process. More
fantastic.
Difficult in some ways than I thought it would be, and easier in other ways. But it's been a remarkable success. I'm really excited about where we're at.
Well, tell us where it's been harder and easier. I think people would be interested in that.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Joyce and I were talking earlier, and one thing that I think I hadn't really anticipated that's made this so much easier is this really has been a grassroots effort that was built from the patient community up. You know, my co-founder is Susan Poteet, who's a fellow caregiver. And, you know, these are people, and Vicki Laux is also on our board. Vicki lost her husband, Rick, to kidney cancer. I think so many of us in the community felt like this was such a need and felt like there really wasn't an organization that was providing this service, that was really pushing out research. And so the fact that we already had this community built, also through the Smart Patients community, really made it easier to get the word out, to push things out, and to get the fundraising effort going. Most of our donations are $25, $50, $100. These are small dollar donations, and they're coming in from people who have a story to tell. And they're getting great support from their friends and family who just want to make a difference. It's frustrating when you have a rare disease like kidney cancer and you feel like there's no outlet. There's no way to really drive support. So that's definitely been the easier part, I'd say, and it's been one of the most special parts of doing this, connecting with those patients. You know, for me, the harder part was I've never done something like this. Luckily, I'm a little crazy. A friend of mine, I know, a friend of mine who I spoke with before I did this one, she has a lot of experience working in the melanoma fundraising area. When I mentioned that I wanted to do this, she said, "You're crazy. That will never work." And I didn't listen to her, and I'm glad that I didn't, because, you know, 6 months in, as the paperwork, just the process of standing up an organization, it really is, whether it's a for-profit or a non-profit, it's still a business. The work associated with that has been much harder, much more challenging than I thought. It's really a full-time job. And she was right. I was crazy. And if I had known how hard it was going to be, who knows? Hopefully, I love to think I still would have done it. I know I would have. I still would have done it. But it's a lot of work. It's definitely a lot of work. And we have a great board that really puts in a lot of time, volunteer time, to make this work.
One of the things that impressed me as I was reading some background in preparation for our call was that Chris and you had created a community during the 4 years that he was working with kidney cancer. And you told a story about he was going in for treatment and the nurse called his name and everybody in the waiting room looked at him like, "Wow, it's Chris." What?
You know, I take no credit for that. I really give it all to Chris. He was a remarkable writer, and he had a way of telling his story in a way that was funny but also real. And I think so many patients connected with him and his voice. It's interesting. We started the blog as a Caring Bridge site just so that we could keep family and friends updated on his treatment. And suddenly we had so many people trying to get into the Karenbridge site that we moved it to a platform that would be easier for anyone to reach. And, you know, at the end, before Chris died, we had a following that was global. You know, we had people from Australia following the blog. In fact, we had people that stayed with us when they were here in the States getting treatment that had just found us through the blog. And to be able to have that voice, for Chris to do that, it just really speaks to the mark that he left. And what a wonderful person he was.
He definitely left a mark. And I'm wondering, could you tell us a little bit about how he found the doctors that he had and what doctors he did have?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a huge struggle for us. In many ways, how difficult it was for us has really led me to remain active in patient advocacy. But Chris was diagnosed in an emergency room. It was suspected appendicitis. And they told us it was not appendicitis. It was a massive tumor on his kidney. They scheduled him for surgery almost immediately, took out the kidney, and said, "You're cured." Which, unfortunately, I think is what way too many patients hear these days. They really didn't schedule any follow-up at all. And when we reached out and said, should we talk to an oncologist, the surgeon said, no, there's no need. We actually found, Robin was one of the first people that we found who said, no, I think you should get a second opinion. It actually took us two more doctors before we could get someone to do a CT scan of Chris's lungs. And when we finally got that CT scan, he had metastatic disease in his lungs.
Mm.
To this day, I don't really know whether that metastatic disease was already present or not. It doesn't matter now, but you think of what would have happened had we not found the patient community that we found through Smart Patients and not had that surveillance. In some ways, looking back, I'm grateful that things transpired that way because it gave us time to research and know what we would do in the event that metastatic disease was diagnosed. And we knew that we wanted to try high-dose IL-2 if we found ourselves in that position. So when we did get the news, the devastating news, we immediately said, okay, we're going to find some place that will do high-dose IL-2. And we ended up at Duke with Dan George, who is a wonderful renal cell specialist, and I should know is on the scientific advisory board for KC Cure. And we did, he did three rounds of high-dose IL-2 at Duke, and that worked for a little while, but when that looked like it wasn't working anymore, we found a new trial that was opening for a very promising drug called MDX-1106, and that was being opened at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. And so we moved to Hopkins for that trial, and it's interesting. I think Chris was the 15th kidney cancer patient to get that drug, and it's now what we know as Opdivo, which is FDA-approved treatment for kidney cancer.
So now, that was very successful also.
What's that?
Did Opdivo give you temporary success?
You know, we had about 9 months of success on Opdivo. It was never a very remarkable response, to be honest. In looking back and doing some research, I was speaking to Chuck Drake, who was one of the researchers on that initial trial, and he was telling me how he had been looking back at Chris's tumor tissue. He said that Chris's disease looked to be of a more genetic variant, and he felt like that variant probably was not a very receptive tumor for immunotherapy like Opdivo for a checkpoint inhibitor.
And why was that? I mean, what did you base that on?
I probably am not giving the best view of it, but he said, just the makeup of Chris's tumor, it just didn't have a lot of variation in the tumor. There wasn't the things that he felt like he would see if there was going to be a response. He specifically said it because it looked like this, like potentially like a genetic variant. It's something that we still hasn't been identified, but he felt like it would not be, knowing now what they know,
responsive.
Right. So just a little editorial comment here that most kidney cancer in the general population is what they call clear cell renal cell carcinoma, and most of the drugs are calibrated first for that. And then other variants, of which there are many, there's probably at least a dozen different cell types of kidney cancer, are kind of glomped into this non-clear cell category and still not terribly well differentiated. So some treatments we know work better with some of these different cell types, but there's very little knowledge yet about that. But we're on a path to learn about it, but it's still early days.
Well, and I think that speaks to why it was so important to us to start KC Cure, because I feel like compared to other cancers, there is so much that we don't know right now.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at, you know, breast cancer, even melanoma, there's so many of these genetic mutations that they're looking at that they can identify and tailor a treatment to. We really don't have that for kidney cancer yet.
Right. So you've teamed up with some other very prominent doctors now in KC Cure, right? Dr. Hammers, Dr. McDermott.
Yes, we have. We have, like I mentioned, Dr. Dan George at Duke, David McDermott, who heads up one of the Kidney Cancer Spore programs in Boston, is part of our scientific advisory board. We also have Jim Brugarolis, who heads up the other Spore program at UC Southwestern. We have Martin Voss from Memorial Sloan Kettering, Dr. Kim Rathmel with Vanderbilt. Really, it's just an all-star team. They've been wonderful, and I'm delighted to have them working with us.
Great. Yeah, and there are changes going on at the national level that are reducing the amount of money that's available for cancer research. So private funding for cancer research is extremely important.
It really is. If you look at what we've seen in melanoma, where there has been such a huge drive of private funding towards research, we've seen great strides and a lot more development. I want to say that the Melanoma Research Alliance is giving out upwards of $5 million in grants just this year alone. And when you think about that level of money that's going out, compared to kidney cancer, where we have no peer-reviewed grants. KC Cure is the first that's out there. So I really hope we'll be at the 5 million point. You know, that's definitely a goal of ours, is to grow it and have something like what Melanoma Research Alliance has for kidney cancer.
I think people also don't realize that some of the unusual cancers like melanoma and renal cell carcinoma, which respond in different ways to treatment than most other cancers, the research that comes out of these quirky, unusual cancers really does help the entire cancer community, and it brings breakthroughs that are coming from entirely different directions.
Right.
It's such a good point, Robin. If you look at immunotherapy, for 25 years, you would know better than me, Robin, but melanoma and kidney cancer were really the only two cancers that we were using immunotherapy for. And now we're seeing immunotherapy used in lung cancer, in bladder cancer, in colon cancer, in so many other cancers. And those trials really began through kidney cancer.
That's right.
Yeah, and now it's being used in immunotherapy is being used successfully in lung cancer, which never responded to immunotherapy before, and in colon cancer. And it's being tested in almost every cancer now because they're finding unexpected responses. This new kind of therapy that is generally less full of side effects, although you do have to watch it carefully. You have to be very careful to catch any side effects as they occur. But the new immunotherapy is just basically miraculous for the people that it works for.
Right.
You know, the study of kidney cancer started about 30 years ago, and they wanted to find a cure for kidney cancer. So they started with families where there was a lot of kidney cancer and recruited them and studied them and eventually found the VHL gene. And now we've found additional genes that are not only important in those rare diseases, but in fact, inside the cell, inside the tumor of every person in the general population who gets kidney cancer, you will find changes in the VHL gene or one of these other major genes that are implicated. So as you said before, the study of these rare diseases or the rare cancers has huge implications for finding cures for cancer in the general population. And we now have 11 drugs on the market that were based on VHL research, and all these immune therapies have been launched out of that research as well.
It certainly is wonderful to see such advances coming along finally. And it seems like every advance brings another couple of advances behind it, which bring another couple of advances, and so on and so on. It's just an explosion in knowledge.
You know, Robin, that's so true. It's interesting, though. I after the AstroTissue conference, I posted something on smart patients about some of these advances. And for those of us who have been watching this for a long period of time, we've seen the great strides, but one of the patients posted and said, wow, it just doesn't feel like there's any progress. And when I read that, I thought, you know, to the person who's fighting this on the front lines, that's right. Because they want and need something right now that works for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that really motivated me, reminded me of how much more we need for kidney cancer.
Right. I was asking some of the doctors last night about biomarkers. This is like a urine test or a blood test that you could do in your doctor's office to find out if you have kidney cancer or some other condition, like a PSA test for prostate cancer. And we really need such a tool in the arsenal, because if there's any suspicion of kidney cancer, if you could just go to your regular doctor and get this little quick test, that would be wonderful. And in many countries of the world, most of the people who are diagnosed with kidney cancer are already at stage 4. They already have metastatic disease and they're already in deep sneakers. And if we could find those cases earlier, then more people could survive this condition. So biomarkers are really important. And the doctor said to me, well, we need a big chunk of money and we need 10 years. And I thought, well, we've been funding biomarker research for more than 10 years already. And how do we get it to move forward? So, you know, organizations like yours have the power now to really make that happen.
Absolutely. And I talk a lot about starting KC Cure. You know, it obviously is born out of the journey with Chris, but I also, we have two daughters that carry his genes, and we know that he was diagnosed at a young age, which means it was in all likelihood had some type of genetic link, And also mm-hmm. his paternal grandfather died of kidney cancer. And just like you were saying in terms of being able to test, there's really nothing that I can do to make sure that my daughters don't have this disease other than to scan them, which
right.
is frightening and invasive. And a biomarker test that would, you know, that could be done through urine or through blood would be so remarkable for a family like mine and so many other families.
Well, and biomarkers are also important in assessing how much good you're getting from the treatment. So let's say you're on one of these drugs for 3 months or 4 months, they have to scan you to see what's going on. Whereas if they could do one of these tests and say, yeah, the burden of disease has gone down 20%, that would be much simpler for everybody who's undergoing treatment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it would be more cost
right.
efficient.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, and being able to say, these drugs look best for you, let's start with them, would be a mm-hmm. wonderful thing, rather than just shooting in the dark and saying, well, this drug works best for almost everybody, let's try that.
Mm.
To be able to tailor treatment to an individual cancer in kidney cancer would be wonderful. And people in some cancers where they already have that, like lung cancer has a lot of mutations that respond well to different individual treatments, they just don't understand that that's not the case for all cancers. Some are lagging way behind in being able to sort out the biomarkers.
Right. So, I mean, we used to think breast cancer, for example, was all one disease, and now we understand that there's BRCA1, BRCA2, and there are other varieties, and each one of those is going to respond a little bit differently to various treatments. And the same thing is true for lung cancer or kidney cancer or any of the cancers. Cancer is a very diverse disease, and depending on which particular cell type we're dealing with, it may need a slightly different approach to be successful.
Yes, and it's interesting that the more they look at kidney cancer, the more they find it branching and branching and branching, to the extent that some researchers have said, we actually now think it's possible that every individual case of kidney cancer is really unique and really its own particular type of cancer.
I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, Robin, you've had a lot more years of watching, but I think we all, those of us who have watched patients who have gone through the course of the disease, it's so different and unique in each person. It's almost impossible to identify a pattern, which makes it so much harder. Unlike other cancers, we don't have the luxury of saying, oh, you hit the 5-year mark, you're safe. We all know someone who was diagnosed with kidney cancer who had a recurrence that came much later than was anticipated. I've heard of recurrences as late as 30 years after a nephrectomy.
Wow.
Yeah,
so
that
we're
is
getting
amazing.
We're getting down to the last few minutes of the show, and I wanted to be sure to ask you to give some advice to people who are just launching on this journey. I put a link to kccure.org and also to the Kidney Cancer Chronicles as a reference point. But this is a world that's changing constantly, so even Chris's journey may be different from the journey of someone who's just starting now. So what would you recommend to someone who needs some help with kidney cancer?
Absolutely. The first thing to do, I think, is to be an empowered patient. And I think the Smart Patients Kidney Cancer Community is the best place to go. It's where the first place I tell patients to go to when I meet up with them, finding a community of educated patients, finding a doctor who is a specialist and knows renal cell carcinoma, and knowing what your options and treatments are is essential to combating this disease.
Thank you. So kidneykcure.org and smartpatients.com are great starting points. And if your friends and relations are saying, what can I do to help? There are many things they can do to support you and your family on their journey. But if they wanted to give some money for research, then I'm sure kcure.org would be glad to accept donations.
We would, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention that it is Kidney Cancer Awareness Month in March. And if you're on Facebook, we have a KC Cure Facebook page. We're asking folks to tell their story, and they can launch a fundraiser where money goes directly to KC Cure right on Facebook. Or you can do donations directly through the kccure.org website as well. And we're very grateful for any support. And just know that anything that's donated goes directly to our research program.
Great. And Robin, did you have something you wanted to add as well?
I know how hard it is to be that patient who is currently sick and currently waiting for a breakthrough. And it's really disheartening to be able to tell people it's coming, but it might not come in time for you. So that's our goal, our big goal, is to make these breakthroughs happen in time for the people who need them right now. And I think KC Cure is one of the organizations to look to for that hope.
Thank you. And also between KC Cure and Smart Patients, you'll find out about various clinical trials that are going on. And the latest and greatest information is often in those clinical trials. So you should find out about them. It may or may not be a fit for you, but you should explore it and consider it because you could help find something that might be beneficial for you yourself and also might pioneer the next good, great treatment for everybody. So thank you so much, Dina, for being with us. And thank you, Robin, as always. And thanks to everybody out there for listening with us. And we hope you'll be with us again next week. And meanwhile, be well and be a powerful patient. Take good care.